Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. Today, we're talking television with the critic for Canada's Globe and Mail newspaper, John Doyle. We'll be discussing a couple of new Netflix releases later on in the programme. But first, John, welcome to the show. Good to have you with us, as always. It's been, for want of understatement, something of a strange week in North America, more so in the US, perhaps. The inauguration, of course, of President Trump and the rumbles from that still being felt around the world. And the reason I bring this up is you've been writing this week specifically about television in the age of Trump. Now, that's interesting because it's not possibly the first thing people will think about as a consequence of the Trump White House. But nevertheless, it does have some quite, or potentially has quite profound impacts, doesn't it?
It certainly does, Tom, in the arena of American television. First of all, because there is so much television these days from the main traditional networks like NBC, Fox, CBS, to all of the cable channels and the streaming services. There's a lot of television made in the United States. And I was recently at an event in Los Angeles, which is a press tour for television critics for the mid-season. That is, all of the cable channels and networks present their wares for the first few months of this year. That means a lot of press conferences, screenings, discussions. And this was happening just before the inauguration. So while we were all in this hotel in Los Angeles talking about television, the lead up to the inauguration was taking place. So a lot of questions asked of network bosses, showrunners, people making shows, was about any connection between what they were doing and the new and looming Trump era. It turned out to be, I think, a fascinating ongoing discussion because there is a lot of confusion in the American television industry about how television connects with this Trump era.
Well, absolutely. And presumably, John, despite efforts to keep things as current as possible, it's hard to escape that feeling or suspicion, I guess, from without at least, that, you know, the new offering is rooted very much in the recent past. You can be as prescient as you like, and you can try and, I guess, speculate about the direction politics is going in. But one would imagine that much of the presentations, the sneak peeks you got, are still firmly rooted, I guess, in what? Obama's America.
You are quite right. Yes, that, I think, turned out to be the overriding theme. And it's something that I did write about several times for the Globe and Mail. While television can react to current events and changes in the political and social mood more quickly than the film industry can, it became very clear when all of us critics were looking at many of the offerings for the first part of 2017 that we're looking at Obama-era television. I mean, that tells us two things. One, nobody, or hardly anybody in the industry, expected Trump to win. They expected Hillary Clinton to win and a kind of continuation of the Obama era under Clinton. It was notable that several of the offerings, such as ABC's third edition of a very acclaimed and Emmy-winning series, American Crime, which focuses on social issues and is serious-minded television. The third edition of that, which is coming this spring, is about the exploitation of migrant workers. It's about bringing workers to work in the U.S. from Mexico. It's about the exploitation of sex workers who are trafficked across the border. And it was very obvious, thematically, this is about issues that came to the forefront during the Obama era. That is, issues of race and gender, the way the police treat certain segments of the population. These are rooted in Obama era issues, and they will stand, something like that show, I think, will stand as a kind of counter to what Trump and many of his supporters believe. And I think that will go for much of mainstream American television. It would be, might be a slight exaggeration to say it will look like mainstream television will look like it's in the vanguard of resistance to the Trump era. But certainly the first 6 months of this year, that's what it will look like.
Well, John, and I know, you've written about this facet that I'm going to ask you about. How about the ability, the facility, really, for TV to offer up a counterpoint to if there is a prevailing view or a zeitgeist? Because I guess some will worry, particularly for the maybe more small C conservative stations, that they won't want to rock the boat too much, at least until Trump's really set his stall out. But I know you've been writing saying we shouldn't worry about that because there are lots of people who are fearless in TV and will look to push the envelope. Whether we look maybe, yeah, to cable providers who are by their definition a bit more ballsy maybe, but also even the mass audience or the mass providers, then they won't be cowed by what's happening on Capitol Hill.
Well, I think there's a key point in your question, Tom, which is that there is a huge difference between conventional network television, that is what CBS or NBC or Fox does, and what cable does. Conventional network television does have to rely on ratings and on advertising to sustain itself. It will probably not want to rock the boat. Whereas cable, HBO, Showtime, and some of the streaming services can go their own way. They don't depend on the appreciation of the public and advertisers in the same way. So, for instance, with something like Showtime, David Nevins, the head of Showtime, pointed out to us that it was already entering the Trump era with a show like Billions, which is about billionaires, New York politics. It's about the politics of money. It is very much a show that, although it started airing before now, seems set in the Trump era. It was also interesting, I think, that Showtime talked about the possibility of having a weekly politics satiric comedy show going forward through the Trump era. On the one hand, I think that tells you that there is a huge interest in politics in the U.S. thanks to the intensity of the experience of an incoming Trump administration, and also that there is plenty of material for comedy. Everybody, I think, at this point wants their John Oliver, wants their Samantha Bee, because those are sort of magnetic shows that draw people to watch, you know, whether it's every night or every week, because so much is going on in politics and it all seems so strange that they realize there is going to be a great deal of material for comedy. And one of the examples of that, which is also mainstream, is that the ratings for Saturday Night Live are better than they have been in 15 years.
Which is, and I mean, that's a pretty striking figure, John, isn't it? Now, I know you've written that escapism isn't what everybody wants and that, you know, many viewers are willing to kind of roll out their sleeves. Nevertheless, I want to turn next to a bit of old-fashioned escapism, away from the politics for a moment. Let's look to Netflix. One of the latest shows to hit the streaming service is Frontier. This was originally broadcast on Discovery Canada last year, but it's now being unleashed upon the rest of the world. John, if you can, fill us in. What's the sort of storyline? What's Frontier all about?
It's a good show. I like it a lot. It's one of those very good Canadian shows which tackles, for most people, Canadian history. And I'm talking about even Canadians. Canadian history tends to be thought of as fairly boring. But this is definitely the not boring part of Canadian history. It is set at a time before actually Canada officially existed. It is set in mainly towards the end of the 18th century, when the Hudson's Bay Company essentially controlled most of what is now Canada. And the fur trade was extremely lucrative. And a lot of people wanted in on the fur trade, not just the Hudson's Bay Company. And it was a time of ruthlessness. Small communities dotted around what is now Eastern Canada, Ontario and Quebec, doing trade with native populations. And the trade in fur was so lucrative that everybody wanted in. And the core of Frontier really is the Hudson's Bay Company in London realizing that there were all of these people who were trying to enter the fur trade and were taking their money and resources and sometimes stealing their employees. So it is about a ruthless battle for the fur trade in the 18th century in what is now Canada. A rollicking good tale, actually.
Okay, well, let's hear a little clip. Here, John, this is a little extract from Frontier. Let's take a listen.
I thought you could keep up with the vice.
Shut your eyes, Mike and Smith.
We need to make something bigger. We're not going to survive another winter here.
What? How would you like to work for the most powerful company in the world?
The Hudson's Bay Company has controlled the northern trade for 100 years, as if this land and its wealth is their birthright.
It's the new world, Michael.
I've never seen anything like it.
Soldiers have only one thing on their minds, protect the gold. And the fur is the gold.
If these pelts get traced back to me, I will not take the fall of the wound.
That's a clip from Frontier. John, let me ask you, because there's been some, well, a little bit of mixed criticism about this. Some people have said it sort of gives that early Canadian history something of a kind of Game of Thrones treatment, a bit of a Game of Thrones mood, and that's not to everyone's taste. But I sense from what you said that certainly, even if that's the case, it doesn't stand in the way of this being good fun.
I don't see much of a connection with something like Game of Thrones. The only sort of obvious connection is that a central figure, the sort of looming character in the midst of this mess of a war about the fur trade, his name is Declan Harp. He's a sort of half-Irish, half-native Canadian figure, and he's played by Jason Momoa, a very familiar figure from Game of Thrones. It's Khal Drogo, I think, is the figure he played in Game of Thrones. So some people might see a superficial connection because of that, but this is really, there is a lot of violence. It is a very bloody show, but that in itself, if you go back to the actual historical records, is not an exaggeration. It was a very bloody, brutal time in this part of the world. There was a lot at stake, and it was about the French, the English, the Irish, the natives battling over control of this trade. So it's about banditry. It's sort of a Western set in a very strange kind of West at a time when there was an awful lot of stake in the fur trade. It features young characters who come from Ireland or Scotland, sort of stowaways on a boat. On that level, it's a kind of adventure story. On another level, it is about the sheer brutality of basic capitalism. You get the goods no matter what, you sell them, and you destroy anyone who's in your way.
For some reason, that almost brings me back to where we started off talking, John. I don't know what's going on in my head, but that's Frontier. It's available to watch now on Netflix. Let's discuss, finally, another new show. This is called Riverdale, a dark take on the popular Archie comics. The story begins with the titular town in shock after the death of popular local boy Jason Blossoms. And the series develops. We meet characters who knew him, who were related to him. John, before we get your take, let's hear a little extract. This is from Riverdale.
Oh, my God.
Every corpse has a tale to tell, and this one has the touch of evil.
Archie, a kid is dead. I saw you guys.
How you feel about me? Is it real?
I'm asking you right now if you love me.
Who are you lying to?
I'm Breakfast at Tiffany's, but this place is strictly in cold blood.
Extract from Riverdale there. John, this sounds a little bit like the sort of classic, or I don't know, a modern take maybe on the classic sort of high school soap opera type thing. Is that the right reading of it?
It is a modern take, yes, but more significantly, it is a very twisted and perverse take on it. I was stunned by Riverdale. It's one of the last shows I decided to watch before I went to Los Angeles for the mid-season tour, and expecting that it would be just another attempted adaptation of the iconic Archie comics and the characters in there, and was very surprised to find I was watching what you would describe as a sort of The OC meets Twin Peaks. It is a very strange, and it feels very subversive. The characters in the Archie comics, like Archie, Betty, and Veronica, they are iconic in the American culture. They are considered wholesome and representative of a sort of 1950s, 1960s America. Early on in Riverdale, when Betty asks, you're talking about high school sweethearts here, Betty asks Archie if he really has any feelings for her, and he hesitates. And as a viewer, you are struck by this because he hesitates because he is actually having it off with the music teacher at school, an older woman. And they've been having sex in her car and in the woods. So he is not able to tell the truth to Betty. There is something alluring about the perversity of taking these iconic wholesome characters and setting them in a murder mystery in which everybody has a dark side and there was a lot of sex, drugs, and all kinds of strange things going on. It turns out to be one of the hottest shows of the early part of this year, to the great surprise of many people.
Well, that's interesting, and it struck me, John, when you said about Twin Peaks, because obviously it feels like you're describing the modern iteration of a David Lynch piece. Do you think that sort of influence is what's shaped the creative experience, I guess, of the team behind this one?
Oh, that is acknowledged. Yes, the head of the network that from which it originates, the CW network, acknowledged that what he saw coming when this was pitched to him was something like 90210 or The OC, all blended up with the weirdness of Twin Peaks. It's also beautifully made, and it has a strangeness to it. On the one hand, there is a sort of a retro vibe to it. In certain scenes, you would think this is set in a sort of late 1950s America with the diner, everybody gathering at the diner to have a hot dog or a burger, and the cars. And simultaneously, it is very contemporary because some of the characters make references to things like Mad Men. And there is a lesbian kiss between Betty and Veronica in the first episode, while both are dressed as cheerleaders for the high school football team. So it's a drama that's really pushing the envelope, to use a cliche, but it's also pushing the buttons of everybody who would be familiar with the iconic characters in the Archie comics. It is making you rethink what the Archie comics are all about and how easy it is to take normal and put it into a very perverse setting. Some people are actually reading it as a sort of an early example of Trump-era television. That is, you take the normalcy of America and you twist it. You twist it in like a pretzel, put a dark spin on it, and what have you got? You've got the Trump era in the United States.
And, well, that perfectly means that we end where we began, back with the Trump era on TV. John, as eloquent as always. People can see Riverdale for themselves. It's out tomorrow on Netflix. John Doyle, thanks for being with us. As always, great to hear from you. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. The programme was produced by Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time tomorrow. We'll be talking about books. But for now, it's goodbye and thank you very much for listening.